This is Will's Band of the Week for January 6th, 2019. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Wilson from an undisclosed remote location.
Hello.
Hey, Wilson.
Hello. How's it going?
Have we spoken with you since your top 10 of last year?
I don't think so.
It seems like maybe we haven't. And now we have a super special because, well, did you even have a top 10 of 2018?
I only really listened to like four albums this year that came out actually this year. So I didn't really, no, I didn't have a top 10 this year.
So you could have done a top four. It would have just been, these are the only albums I listened to.
Right. I don't know if that would have been all that interesting though.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. So, we're going to take it back to 1968. That's pretty cool. And I'm not sure why. Did you do this on purpose that it was exactly 50 years ago?
I mean, yeah, that's 50 years. 1968 was 50 years ago, which is like, you know, top 8 of 68 from 50 years ago. That's what turned 50 this year. So
yeah.
That's kind of...
I mean, I don't know why. It just didn't occur to me until I was... I mean, I knew you were going to do the 1968 thing, and I was doing some music journalism about one of your choices, and I found this article saying it's the 50th anniversary. Then I realized it's the 50th anniversary of all of these things. That's a long time.
Yeah. It held up well, in my opinion.
Pretty cool. Before we get to this exciting feature, the top eight of 68, we are going to play a little thing we got here from Son of David.
Welcome back into the Freddie D Studios. I, of course, am Gabriel Zuger, a.k.a. the host of the Dull Crayons, a.k.a. Son of David from the New York branch. And I'm coming to you having just listened to the Chris Barrett and Will 2.5 hour epic top 10 2018 year in review. And, you know, I just figured that I owed it, having not called in a while, I owed it to the, dozens of fans out there for Will's Band of the Week to give them my own top 10, my own year in review. So this will be a solo 2.5 hour adventure. So strap yourselves in. I do hope you enjoy it. I of course, not being the greatest fan of top tens, I find rankings to be a bit too competitive for my socialist background. So instead, I'm simply going to, in no particular order, give you some of the highlights of 2018 in the indie rock world. And I'm going to start you off with a trio of sophomore albums that I thought didn't get quite the recognition from the other top tens as I would have wanted them to. Starting off, Soccer Mommy. The album is Clean from 2018. It is simply a perfect follow-up to their first album. Every track, an absolute, rock stunner, just really, really almost a spitting reprint of their first one. I mean, a lot of songs just have that, that characteristic charm and energy of the first album. The second up is Petal, Magic Gone from 2018. This, if I were ranking, would probably be my number one overall. An absolute stunner. The versatility, the diversity of the tracks, the soul-crushing, emotionally wrought nature of the beast. This album is really a masterpiece, a work of art, something to be experienced in the whole, as a true album should be. And Petal is just getting it done on every level. We very much expect many more big things to come out of this young artist from Pennsylvania. The third is Sidney Gish with No Dogs Allowed. I know that David has talked about Sidney Gish on the podcast before, having seen her live, and she's just an incredible solo act, doing it all herself. She's, you know, one of these days she's going to get discovered and it's going to be disastrous for everyone else in the game. But No Dogs Allowed is super fun, super funky beats, very catchy tunes, and must listen to, an absolute must. And then I'm giving honorable mention to Chance the Rapper, who, if we're talking about indie artists, indie, of course, being short for independent artists, then you can't get much more independent than a guy who has literally never signed to a label, but is listened to by millions. Totally indie, totally, you know, underground, and he put out a few independent tracks, not a full album in 2018, but some of the tracks he put out were simply spectacular. I Need Security is probably the best song written in 2018 and definitely the best beat out there. So, again, a must listen to as far as G. Zuger of the Dull Crayons is concerned. And then a band who did have an album in 2018, because frankly they put out probably one album every 6 months, and I can't necessarily vouch for all of their albums, but they were easily the best concert experience that I had in 2018, and I did hear the 2018 review start off with a bunch of live honorable mentions. Best concert of the year was Dr. Dog by far. They did have Sandy Alex G opening for them, who was pretty good. But really, if you can see Dr. Dog in 2019, get out there and see that show. And just happy to be on and sharing some of my honorable mentions for 2018 with y'all. As always, stay frosty, keep dull, carry snacks, and listen to the Dull Crayons on any free podcast providers out there. Enjoy.
All right. Thanks, Gabriel. There we go. We're trying to sum up 2018 properly. So there we go.
Yeah.
All right. One other thing before we get to the main event. We really haven't done one of these in quite a while.
1, 2, 3, 4.
It's time for the
mailbag.
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 I just wanted to mention that we heard again from Ginger from China, and that's just so cool because we think we have some listeners. We know we have listeners all over the world, but here's the thing. Here's a little inside scoop. I don't have the subscription level. If I paid more money, I could get more details on where every download of the podcast comes from, but I don't. I don't pay that extra money. So we don't really know where, we know how many downloads we have. We don't know where they come from. So it's really cool to specifically hear that we have a listener from China. So she sent us another message to tell us that she's still listening, and she was very nice and said that she gets more than $0 worth out of the podcast. And that's, what more could you ask for?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't think we could ask for anything more. So, all right, are we ready for the main feature now?
I would say so.
So, Wilson, did you go about this specifically as a, you know, like a project that you're going to delve into 1968, or did you just kind of find that you were listening to a lot of music from that year and then kind of just came across it that way?
Well, actually, my favorite music year in history is 1967, and I have like 15 or 20 albums that I love from that year. So given that it was 2018, I figured I couldn't do 1967 because that was 51 years ago. Yeah. That doesn't really work. So there's quite a bit less unbelievably great albums from 1968 as there are from 1967, but I figured that it would be kind of fun to see if I could find the best of the best. And I actually, I would have probably done a top 10 if I had found more incredible albums that I like really liked, but I only could really come up with 8. But it kind of worked out to have it be a nice top 8 of 68.
Yeah, it has a good cadence to it, to say it that way. Yeah, and plus you don't want to force it if just to tack on two they're not really enthused about, right?
Right. Yeah. These all eight of these albums are just really, really great albums that I have been a big fan of.
So you told me, when you told us that you were going to do 1968, I looked back in my catalog to see what I had. I don't have very much music from 1968 in my music library, and a couple of the things that I do have are greatest hits things, which don't really count, as 1968.
Right. Yeah.
But I did have, I think like about half of your specific tracks you selected, I had in my library for various reasons from various sources. So, hard to argue with it. So, should we get going? Are we going to start with number 8 and count them down?
I would say that would be a logical way to do it.
Okay, and is this all, this is album-based, right? You're rating the albums, not the tracks.
Right, it's album-based. In fact, it's kind of contradictory. If we were rating it as far as tracks, I would say number 8, the track pick for number 8 would probably be my favorite track from 1968, which is kind of weird that it's number 8 on the list of albums, but, this is about albums, not tracks.
All right, so let's go to it. What's number 8?
Number 8 is the album Lady Soul by Aretha Franklin, and the pick is You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman.
Aretha Franklin, and it's also timely because she died this year.
Yes, unbelievable. That is probably my favorite Aretha Franklin song as well. And it's so interesting because that song was written by Carole King, and Carole King wrote it in the 60s, and Aretha Franklin released it, and Carole never really thought that it could sound as good as it did when Aretha Franklin made it. I remember hearing recounts of Carole King when she first heard Aretha Franklin's version, just was absolutely blown away that Aretha made her song sound so full of passion and soul, and I love it. I love that song a lot. It's one of the rare cases where I would say that I would like Aretha Franklin's version, in fact, more than Carole King's version.
There's a compilation album, like a Best of Carole King, is actually called A Natural Woman.
Yeah.
And I think I had the good old fashioned CD, and now I have it, of course, on the digital media, but Carole King has a lot of old classics too.
She sure does.
Yeah. Getting back to Aretha Franklin, she died on August 16th this year, and that's the same day, calendar day, that Elvis Presley died. He died on August 16th also.
Wow, I didn't know that.
A little trivia item. I remember that because I had a friend whose birthday was August 16th, and then now I have two sons, two of them, who have a birthday of August 16th, including Reese, who was on the podcast last week. So there you go. It's a little August 16th numerology or something like that.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, everything kind of just fits together, right?
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
All right, number 7 from 1968.
Friends by the Beach Boys, and the track is Busy Doing Nothing.
I had to fix a lot of things this morning, 'cause they were so scrambled. But now it's okay, I tell you I've got enough to do. The afternoon was filled up with phone calls. What a hot, sticky day. If you decide to come, you're gonna do it right. Drive for a couple miles, you see a sign and turn left for a couple blocks. Next is mine, you'll turn left on a little road. It's a bumpy one, you'll see a white fence. Move the gate and drive through on the left side. Come right in and you'll find me in my house somewhere, keeping busy while I wait. I get a lot of thoughts in the morning, I write them all down. If it wasn't for that, I'd forget them in a while. And lately I've been thinking about a good friend I'd like to see more of, I think I'll make a call.
That's the Beach Boys, and the album is Friends. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, a very common mentality that I see a lot is, you know, the Beach Boys surf rock up until like 1965, 1966. Then they released Pet Sounds, which was really great. And then they released Smiley Smile, which kind of sucked. And then everything after that was terrible. And that's, I hear that a lot, and a lot of people just kind of just like, yeah, you know, post-1967 Beach Boys just isn't very good. And it's true to an extent, because once you get into the 70s, you've got like the Magic Transistor Radio and all that stuff, which is just awful. It's just really embarrassing and really bad. But like Friends, it's a 12-song album. It's 26 minutes long, so it's got a bunch of really short songs. And I like it. It's not trying to be more than it is. Like, that song is just, it's literally just Brian Wilson telling his friend how to get to his house with step-by-step directions. And it doesn't have any meaning beyond that. That's it. And it's just kind of this pleasant thing to put on. And it's just, you know, it's just kind of there for what it is. And I love that about it.
It's a good pop song, definitely.
Yeah.
So I was doing some music journalism, and I was astonished at the answer that I got to this. Like, we're going to pose a question, and we're going to have the listeners think about it, then we're going to give the answer. How many studio albums did the Beach Boys put out? Okay, so if you asked me that, I would have said, oh, you know, I'll go with like 8. Well, this was their 14th studio album, and they have 29. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. The Beach Boys are one of those examples of like, you really should have probably just stopped in the early 70s.
So how many of the 29 have you listened to?
Oh, probably only like 5 or 6, because, you know, like I said, after about 1970, they kind of stopped being good. There's a couple good songs in there, like I think from the album Sunflower, which I think is like 1978 or something. There's like one or two pretty good songs on there, but most of it is just really embarrassing. Hmm. And it's just really, like, they released an album in 2016, so it's just kind of...
It was even called a Beach Boys album, not a Brian Wilson album?
Yeah, it was the Beach Boys, yeah. And I think the title of the album is And That's Why God Created the Radio or something like that.
Hmm.
It's like just super weird, like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Just stop.
Well, that's a good one. Good pick.
Yes.
All right. We're up to the number 6 album of 1968.
Yes. This one could almost not be considered an album from 1968. It's a soundtrack to the movie The Graduate, and The Graduate came out in 1967, but then they released the soundtrack in 1968. So I guess by a technicality it is from 1968, but it's a little on the iffy side. But it was just so, the soundtrack to The Graduate is just so good that I just had to include it. And it's just, it's not all Simon and Garfunkel either. There's like foxtrots and stuff, and from some band they hired, I don't remember what the name of it was, but it's very, very good, and it's well listenable just as a standalone thing. But the track I picked from that is The Sounds of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone. Streets of cobblestone, 'neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. People writing songs that voices never share. No one did disturb the sound of silence. Fool said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words like silence.
Yeah, Simon and Garfunkel. The good Graduate stuff. Graduate soundtrack.
Very good.
Yeah, I mean, that's just an undeniably fantastic song. And
yeah.
Have you ever seen the movie, The Graduate?
Of course. It's my favorite movie of all time.
Really? I mean, I saw it probably when I was, probably younger than you. I mean, I probably saw it when I was a teenager.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely worth watching again because the cinematography and the symbolism and the soundtrack, it's just all so real. It's really good.
It's interesting to me to contemplate watching a movie that I haven't seen in 50 years or 40 years or whatever. Just I'm sort of apprehensive because I wonder how it will translate to modern times, you know. It sounds like this one still works pretty well.
Yeah.
So makes me want to go back and watch it. So
it's a good one.
Cool. All right. What's the fifth best album of 1968?
Well, I would say At Folsom Prison by Johnny Cash. It is a live album. It's, I don't know how long it is, probably about an hour. And it's got crowd noises and it's, you know, it's a live album. And he recorded it at Folsom Prison, obviously. So it's pretty funny. If you listen to the whole thing, you can hear like when he talks about like breaking out of prison or doing whatever, doing naughty things. You can hear the crowd kind of applaud. It's just, it's very funny in that respect to listen to it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the song I picked is, I guess you could kind of say the title track, Folsom Prison Blues, which is the opening track.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
But that train keeps a rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. I bet there's rich folks eating from a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me.
Johnny Cash, Folsom Prison Blues.
It cracks me up every time when that's a good example when he says, but I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. And then everyone cheers.
All these people cheer, yeah.
You hear one guy go like, woo!
Right. Yeah, I noticed that too.
Yeah, there's stuff like that all over the whole album.
Yeah. Johnny Cash was not your standard country artist, was he? I mean, because he was classified as country, but he was a rocker and kind of an outlaw kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
Johnny Cash. That's undeniably the fifth best album of 1968.
Right. Yeah, I would say so.
Number four. Okay. I had completely forgotten about this. And it's so fun that you're bringing this up. So now I've built it up. So what's number four?
Switched on Bach by Walter / Wendy Carlos. The organist who played this album was transgender, and as far as I can tell, it's really unclear what they identified as in 1968 when they released this album. I know it was released under the name Walter Carlos.
I was so fascinated when you chose this, because I'm sure that my dad had the LP, and
yeah.
I remember hearing about it, and it was definitely Walter Carlos, and I read an article about this, and apparently he sort of changed his identity to Wendy in the early 70s, but he didn't really publicly disclose it until the late 70s. So the article, I think it's just from the Wikipedia article, it says that so basically his identity switch to Wendy was 1972, but then he sort of kept it under wraps until the late 70s. And then he got a pretty reasonably, not bad response. People were pretty nice to him about it, I guess. And then he said something like, I wasted all that time kind of keeping this a secret. And it was a complete waste of time to worry about it. So anyway, yeah. And then he's just been Wendy Carlos since the late 70s.
Right, yeah, and all that's all interesting, but put that aside, this was one of the albums that really got the public to kind of accept and understand electronic music, and you can read the back of the record, it kind of tells you about it, but it's basically, the idea is that the public, the older folks and everyone, is more familiar with Bach and Bach's music, so kind of applying the synthesizer and electronic music to Bach is kind of an easier pill to swallow for the common people than an entirely new album of original songs with electronic music.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
So this album pretty much started the popularization of electronic music 10 years before Kraftwerk's classic albums. So pretty cool stuff, I think.
Right, and of course this is featuring the classic Moog synthesizer, and
yes.
apparently they were buddies. Like Bob Moog and Wendy Carlos like were knew each other pretty well. So and there was like this thing between them in terms of like featuring the instrument or whatever. So pretty cool.
Yeah.
So this was hard to find. I did manage to track down something that we can play. But if you go to Amazon, for example, you can buy this CD for $73. So it must be completely out of print, and or maybe they only made a certain number of CDs. Do you have it on LP?
Yeah, I have like two or three copies of it on LP.
I haven't been
able to find it on any streaming service. I've been looking for it. What I'm going to have to do, I think, is just record a record into Audacity.
Yeah,
I'm at a loss. I don't know what else to do.
Right. You could do that. It's a good old-fashioned way. So, so what do you want to play from this? The first track?
Yeah, the first track is the one that I'm most familiar with.
It's called Sinfonia to Cantata Number 29. Switched on Bach.
Yeah, every time I listen to that, I just think, God, this is just so cool. And it's made even cooler if you look on the cover of the record. It's the keyboardist they got to play the Moog. You can see him dressed in a powdered wig and all kinds of stuff, and then he has those right. big 1960s silver headphones on.
Oh yeah,
and he's standing in front of the Moog synthesizer. This is just so cool. I just love this.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's just so great that you brought that up, because I had completely forgotten about it, so it's fun to hear that again.
Yeah.
All right, we're up to the number three album from 1968.
Yes, the Village Green Preservation Society by the Kinks. This is an uncommon album for this time, because a lot of the albums coming out around this time were all about social change and reform and the future and, you know, out with the old and with the new. And this album is exactly the opposite. This is a nostalgic album, taking a look at the past, the simple ways of rural life, and just kind of turning it into this rock album of just very interesting and different songs that is just totally out of place in the time it came out. And I find that very, very interesting. You can hear in the title, the Village Green Preservation Society. They want to preserve the past. But the song I picked is called Big Sky.
Sky looked down on all the people looking up at the big sky. Everybody's pushing one another around. guy feels sad when he sees the children scream and cry. But the big sky too big to let it get him down. Big sky too big to cry. Big sky too high to see. People like you and me. They got problems. They get depressed and they hold their heads in their hands and they cry. People lift up their hands and they look up to the big sky. But the big sky is too big to sympathize. Big sky's too occupied.
The Kinks. The Kinks are the Village Green Preservation Society. That was actually from the 2018 deluxe edition. You know what's interesting? I'm going to make a comparison. The Kinks and the Beach Boys. They're both examples of bands that had a completely different, like their existence as a hit record band is completely different. Like the hits that I heard on the radio when I was growing up, as opposed to the albums they were making that I knew nothing about. You know, it's like this thing where you wouldn't, you know, I didn't know that these bands had these like rich catalogs of albums, but I there's a thing in common between those two bands. I think that there was all this music out there.
It's a classic thing from the late 60s of this band that had a lot of, you know, radio hits in the early mid 60s, making really interesting kind of almost out of character albums in the late 60s that end up being just masterpieces.
Yeah, it's really, I know that I could delve much more deeply into the Kinks and really like a lot of their stuff. Like I have with the Beach Boys, you know, since, you know, probably from your dad and Chris telling me, you know, how great some of their old stuff was. Like I had never really listened to Pet Sounds until just a few years ago. So pretty cool. The Kinks at number 3. This is the time where we say it's getting serious, right?
I would say so.
Right about the time that I usually say that. So, We're up to number 2.
Yes, this is Odyssey and Oracle by The Zombies. This is kind of another example of a bigger hit band making this really rich and interesting album. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of their masterwork here. But I think it's worth noting that they spelled Odyssey wrong on the title of the album, and it's still spelled wrong. I don't know. It's Odessy instead of Odyssy. So, I don't know. I guess they just artistic choice. I mean, I don't know. But that's interesting, I always thought. But this album is just, it's very poppy. It's really great. Like, it's like just a 60s pop album, late 60s pop. It's all really happy and upbeat. And it's kind of psychedelic, too. It kind of makes you really, if you listen to it too late at night, you can get dizzy. the song I picked is called Hung Up on a Dream.
Dribbling in the heat, and from that nameless
Yeah, that's great. The Zombies. Yeah. And at least one of the lead guys in the Zombies was a guy named Rod Argent. And then he made a band, or had a band called Argent.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Because there was a hit in about, I don't know, 1970 or something called Hold Your Head Up by Argent.
Cool.
Yeah. The Zombies. Yeah, that's another one. I know I could go back and listen to that, and I'd really like it. That's a quintessential 60s kind of sound.
Yeah, that album is also just completely filled up with Mellotron sounds. And the Mellotron, if you don't know, is that kind of, it's a tape-based keyboard where when you hit a key, it plays a little reel of tape, which has a pre-recorded sound on it. And it's the same keyboard that's at the very beginning of Strawberry Fields Forever by the Beatles. But the flute sound was in this song, and they also had the artificial strings. So every time that's in anything, I always just think that's very interesting because I love the design of that keyboard.
It's funny when you think about how difficult it was, how creative they had to be to make those sounds back then.
Yeah.
Now you have all these.
It's really cool.
All these contraptions that you can, you know, technology has made it easier, at least from the musician's perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I guess, whenever we get to number one, we need to do this. That's Nicholas's drum roll. Well, I think, like, people who have really been paying attention shouldn't be too surprised at what's coming up. But
yeah, it's maybe a little bit cliche. I don't know. It's a 90 minute, I think it's 90, maybe 93 minute masterpiece. It's got 30 songs. It's a very, very rocky, all over the place album. It's the Beatles self-titled album, the White Album, also known as the Beatles. And it got that whole deluxe version this year. I haven't even listened to it. I don't know. I'm not sure, too certain that I'd care for a remixed version of such a classic album. But it was really hard for me to pick a song from this album, like one song that could represent the entire album, because there just really isn't any. There's not any song on this album that could represent the whole thing. You know, you've got Revolution 1, Happiness is a Warm Gun, which is the one I ended up picking, and, you know, Birthday, Helter Skelter, arguably the first metal song. Then there's just Revolution 9, which is an 8-minute, like, what the hell is this kind of audio collage thing. It was John Lennon's idea, so I don't know. They put that in there too. But yeah, Happiness is a Warm Gun kind of has a few of the big elements of the whole album in, and so that's my pick.
She's not girl who misses much. Oh yeah. She's well acquainted with the touch of the velvet hand, like a lizard on a window pane. The man in the crowd with the multicolored mirrors on his hobnail boots, with his eyes while his hands are busy working overtime. A soap impression of his wife, which he ate and donated to the National Trust. I'm going down, down to the bits that I left uptown. I need a fix, cause I'm going down. Mother Superior jumped the gun. 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 Mother Superior jumped the gun.
Happiness is a warm gun. Happiness is a warm gun, mama. When I hold you in my arms and I feel my finger on your trigger, I know nobody can do.
Yep, the White Album. Happiness is a Warm Gun.
It's all over the place, even in that one song. That song had three modulations in it. It changed keys three times, and it changed time signatures a couple of times, and it's just the instrumentation is really weird. That's why I picked that one, because it's kind of a representation of just how all over the place this album is. No two songs are really that similar.
So without spoiling what could be a future podcast, how would you rank the White Album among all the Beatles albums? Where does it fit?
That's a really tough question, because every single Beatles album is just completely different, and it's really hard to compare. Like, for example, comparing Abbey Road to Please Please Me, it's just really difficult to do, because Abbey Road is such a great album as a late 60s, more kind of on the starting to get into classic rock side, whereas Please Please Me is just equally high quality of a different genre of like late 50s, early 60s kind of Britbeat kind of thing. It's just they're totally different, and it's really hard to compare.
Yeah.
I'd say the White Album, I don't know. I suppose the only way I could answer that would be by saying that I would say Sgt. Pepper and Abbey Road and Revolver are better than the White Album, and that Beatles for Sale is definitely worse than the White Album. And that's kind of the extent of what I can really say about it. I don't know. It's kind of, you know, there's those top three or four that are super great, and then there's Beatles for Sale, which is just, it's just the worst one.
You know, now that I think about it, didn't we do a podcast where you ranked the albums? I think we must have, because I remember you telling me about Beatles for Sale being like the worst. And
yeah, I mean, Beatles for Sale isn't a bad Beatles album. I mean, well, it is a bad Beatles album, but it's not a bad album. It's just every single other Beatles album is better than it. It's just, it's not that it's bad. And every time, because when I'm with my friends, it's kind of a joke, like, yeah, you know, Beatles for Sale is the worst Beatles album. But like, I always kind of tilt my head, like, but in defense of it, though, it is really good still. It's a Beatles album, and Beatles albums are good. Yep. So it is really good.
If you're going to rank, that's one of the perils of doing rankings, because something has to be last, right? And you might not think that it's bad, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's an easier way to say that something is bad is that everything else is better than it.
Yeah.
So like during the holiday season, all my friends are always obsessed with All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey. And so I can't be mean to them and say that song sucks.
Yeah.
But what I say instead is I don't want to say that that's the worst Christmas song of all time. So I'll just say this. Every single other Christmas song that has ever been made is better than it.
Well, if you say it that definitively, I think it still sounds it sounds like you're saying it's bad, I think.
Right. But it's not a direct.
Right.
It's not literally saying that it's bad. It's just kind of an indirect way of saying that I hate that song.
All the others are better. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's kind of how it is with Beatles for Sale.
All right. Well, the White Album made its way to the top of 1968. So, well, we've covered it. That's it. 1968. Any other parting remarks? Any singles or albums that almost made it or anything like that you'd like to mention?
Not that I can really think of. All I can say is if you like 1968, 1967 is so good. And anything that came out in 1967 almost is probably good because that year was so great. So check out 1967.
So now, as long as we got you here, like, how does 1969 compare? Have you ever tried that year?
Well, that's what I'm doing this year. One thing I'm doing this year is I'm going to make a calendar of all the albums that came out in 1969, and when their 50th anniversaries hit is when I'm going to, like, quote unquote, go to the record store and buy them and then listen to them as they come out. So that's my plan. But the ones I know of now are Cloud Nine by The Temptations, which is so far pretty good. There's Abbey Road, obviously, came out in 1969. I think Dusty in Memphis came out in 1969. I'll have to check that, but I'm pretty sure it did. So yeah, I'm excited.
Also, the first two Led Zeppelin albums came out in 1969. So
yeah,
I don't know if you're a Led Zeppelin guy, but you might have to go listen to those and see what you think.
Yeah, I've been meaning to. I haven't quite been sucked in yet, but I've been meaning to. So I'll probably get around to it this year.
The critics used to really hate Led Zeppelin. Like every time a Led Zeppelin album would come out, the reviewers would say, like Rolling Stone or whatever would say, you know, this is just terrible. It's bad. And then everywhere, like in the shopping mall, they'd have like 8-track tapes of Led Zeppelin. They were just everywhere. And that's probably part of it. Like if you're a critic, you know, it was not cool to say Led Zeppelin is good, you know. And then, of course, 30, 40, 50 years later, everybody's like, wow, they were awesome. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, great. Thanks. Next year, maybe you'll have a top 10 from 2019, or maybe 1969,
maybe.
Or maybe you'll do the top 10 albums by somebody.
We'll have to see. I'll think about it for a year, and I'll get back to you in 365 days.
Okay, that sounds good. Good enough. All right. Well, thanks a lot. I guess we should sign off then.
I suppose.
And we'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter at Will's Band. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.